Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
Students in today's public schools are taught revised history. History that rewrites Christopher Columbus's discovery of America, the first settlers in what would become the United States. Why were they here? What did they do except burn witches at the stake or hang them during the Salem witch trials? They, of course, are portrayed as the first Bible thumpers. Revised history to taint the students' view of America and her history is not only a disservice to the students, but a danger to the nation. A close look at the Pilgrims teaches us many important lessons. My guest today is Bill Federer. He's a Christian historian, author, nationally known speaker, and president of Amerisearch, Inc. Thanks, Bill, for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
And we'll just start with, what is Amerisearch, Inc., and what is American Minute?
Well, I've been writing books for about 30 years and focusing on how unique America is in world history. And I send out a daily email called an American Minute. And it also airs as a radio spot on several hundred stations. And then I have a TV show called Faith in History. And people can sign up at my website, AmericanMinute.com.
Okay. How can folks tune into your TV program?
Well, the TCT.TV is the station.
Okay.
And they air on DirecTV and others. But you can also find the links on my AmericanMinute.com website.
Oh, okay. Okay, great, great. So why do you think there's such an effort to rewrite our history?
It's called deconstruction, and it's a socialist tactic that you go into a country and you say negative things about the founders of the country so that people will emotionally detach from them. And then you get them into a neutral where they don't remember where they came from, and then you can brainwash them into whatever future you have planned for them. And it's not just a recent event, 3rd century BC, warring states period in China. Half a dozen kingdoms fighting, one wins, led by Qinshi Huangdi. And he was being criticized for doing things differently than they had been done before. So he decided to destroy all records of how things were done before. And he burnt tens of thousands of bamboo annal books. And then you had the French Revolution. They decided to trash all the history, tear down statues of good King Henry IV and dig up the bones of Saint Genevieve, and they made 1792 the new year one.
Oh, my goodness.
And then they didn't want a seven-day week because it went back to the Bible, so they came up with a 10-day week. They said 10 was the number of man, 10 fingers, so they made everything divisible by 10. They called it the metric system. But it was this intentional effort to erase the history. So Pol Pot did the same thing in Cambodia. He made 1975 the new year zero. Anything prior to that was irrelevant. And he killed anybody that wore glasses.
You're kidding. If anyone wore glasses, they were on his hit list?
Yeah, he killed a third of his own country. It's the Khmer Rouge, the killing fields in Cambodia.
Oh, my goodness.
And so this idea of erasing history is when Islam comes into a country, they destroy all the history of the previous civilizations. And so we're just experiencing this done. It's a sales tactic. If I was a toothpaste salesman, the first thing I do is I tell you negative things about the toothpaste you are currently brushing with.
Yeah.
You're still brushing with that old stuff. Haven't you read the article that leaked the enamel off your teeth? Ooh, you're repulsed by it. Wow. Now I have you in a neutral. You're open-minded. And then I give you my pitch for this brand new tartar-controlled breath freshener toothpaste. So they go into the classrooms and they tell the kids negative things about the founding fathers. They took land from Indians. They told people into slavery. They were chauvinists. Ooh, the kids are repulsed by them.
Yeah.
Forget the fact that they gave you a country where you're in charge of your life and all of us together are in charge of the country. Forget that. And so the kids are repulsed by the founders. Now you have the kids in a neutral position. They're open-minded. And then you give them your pitch for socialism, LGBT, Sharia, trans agenda, anything. They're like a, what do they call
like
it?
Like a sponge. They're like a sponge that is absorbing all this stuff, this false information.
Yeah, an undifferentiated stem cell.
Wow.
They can bait it with hormones and turn it into a different type of cell.
Yeah.
So that's the tactic that we've been seeing. And George Orwell wrote about it in his book, 1984.
Oh, yeah.
That every record was changed, every statue was torn down, every street was renamed, he says nothing exists except the present, and even if I made the changes myself, no history remains. And the book's about a character named Winston, and he works for the government's Ministry of Truth, which is nothing more than lies.
The exact opposite of what it says is what it is. Yeah, I try to read that book every year, the beginning of each year, just to remind myself, read that and Animal Farm, to remind myself just how bad things can get if we don't get this country back headed in the right direction. My concern, you know, this is in the public schools, this has been incrementally going on really since John Dewey and even prior to that, you know, brainwashing kids. I began to see that a little bit. I mean, I graduated in 72. But I began to see that a little bit in high school, even, you know, as I was reaching the time that I'd be graduating, I saw a little bit of the demonization of our founding fathers even then. But it's definitely accelerated, even really within the last decade, it's accelerated. And, you know, with all the riots in 2020 and with the tearing down of statues and the continued demonization of Columbus, I mean, Pittsburgh just decided to rename Columbus Day. That was this year. Decided to rename Columbus Day to Indigenous People Day. And, you know, those of Italian descent are outraged, rightfully so. And over in Philadelphia, they've been trying to protect the Columbus statue there in Philly. You know, it was boarded up for a while, so, you know, it wouldn't offend anybody. But the courts finally decide that, you know, it really should be uncovered because it's been there for, you know, a long time, basically. But, you know, the renaming of military bases, it's just, to me, not only upsetting, but it's mind-boggling us how people can do this and not see the dangers of rewriting our history. It's scary, really. It's really scary.
One of the things I do in my books is I zoom out and I look at all of recorded human history, all the way back to the beginning of the invention of writing, Sumerian, cuneiform on clay tablets in the Mesopotamian Valley. Today, that's Iraq, and Egyptian hieroglyphics. And the most common form of government in all of recorded human history is what? It's kings.
Like a king. Mm-hmm.
And a king is more or less a glorified gang leader. So if we got rid of all laws, what would happen? You'd have gangs.
Mm-hmm.
And a gang leader with enough weapons and power, we call a king.
Yep.
And it's a hierarchical system. If you're friends with the king, you are more equal. If you're not friends with the king, you are less equal. And if you're an enemy of the king, you're dead. It's called treason.
Right.
Or you're a slave.
Right.
And as the centuries go on, the kingdoms get bigger because with military advancements, kings can kill more people.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of Cain killing Abel with a rock, they can kill with a bronze weapon or an iron weapon or a phalanx spear that the Greeks had or a scimitar sword the Muslims had or an English longbow or a Mongolian composite bow they could use on horseback or the gunpowder that the Chinese invented. The weapon improves, but it's that same fallen nature, you know, kings killing and Cain killing Abel. And the king of England had the biggest. The sun never set on the British Empire. And he was a globalist, a one-world government guy. India, Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, British Guyana, Canada, Barbados, Bermuda, Jamaica. And America's founders decided they didn't want a globalist king telling us what to do, so they broke away and flipped it and made the people the king. So what makes America unique? The word citizen is Greek. It means co-king, co-ruler, co-sovereign. In other words, you get to be a part of ruling the country. The politicians are your servants. You hire them, you fire them, you vote them in, you vote them out. It's a polarity change in the flow of power on planet Earth. Instead of top-down rule by kings, it's bottom-up rule by we. And it all came to a point with the pilgrims.
Yeah.
And that's why we look to them. So Europe and Eurasia and the Far East, it's all kings, Chinese emperors, Indian maharajas, Russian czars, Muslim sultans, kings of Spain, France, and Austria. It's all kings.
Well, I know the majority of Americans don't realize, I guess, and it just really hit me that in 1776, when the Declaration of Independence was signed, and 8 years later, however long it took for the war to end to actually get our independence, we were at that point the only nation in the entire world that didn't have some monarch of some sort. Is that what you're saying?
Right, right. I mean, the closest was the Netherlands. It had seven provinces, but it had stadtholder. So each city had a mayor, which was more or less a governor of the state. But then the main stadtholder was William of Orange. And it was an 80-year war of independence for the Netherlands to break away from Spain. But he was basically a constitutional monarch, a monarch with some strings attached. But he was still a monarch. Mm-hmm. And so America, we cut the umbilical cord.
Right.
And
right.
we flipped it and made people the king. So right. you get to be in charge of your life, and all of us together are in charge of your country. So the founding fathers, for all their human failings, they gave us a present. And you get to decide what church you want to go to, what career you want to pursue. I mean, back then, you know, in India, they have a caste system.
Mm-hmm. Even today.
And if you're in the top caste, mm-hmm. then you're a Brahmin, you're near divinity. But if you're in the lowest caste, the Dalits, the untouchables, nobody will even touch you. Your job is to take care of sewers. Mm. And there's no upward mobility. In Islam, there's no equality. Women aren't equal to men.
Right.
Infidels, kafirs are not equal to believing Muslims. Mm-hmm. In communist countries, your worth is dependent on your utility. Mm. If you are useful to the state, you're worth more. If you're not, you're a voter off the island. In America, you're equal, because you are made in the image of the creator, and this creator is not a respecter of persons. And they got that idea from the Bible.
Yeah, absolutely. They have very, very many ideas from the Bible. So backing up to, like, say, 1620, when the Pilgrims came over, and then they were followed by the Puritans, what propelled them to make that trip? And they didn't propel very fast across the Atlantic Ocean, but what was really the intent or the deciding factor as to what made them get on those ships, those tiny ships compared to today's ships, to cross the Atlantic Ocean, which was a very treacherous expedition, to say the least? What propelled them to do that? And tell us what the differences between the Pilgrims and the Puritans were.
The Puritans were inside of the Anglican Church trying to purify it. The Pilgrims were separatists. They actually separated from the Anglican Church, and they would meet in secret in barns and basements by candlelight. So the attitude in Europe was what the king believed, the kingdom had to believe. Mm. And if you didn't believe the way your king did, you were a traitor.
Wow.
And so England was Anglican, Scotland was Presbyterian, Holland was Dutch Reformed, Switzerland was Calvinist, Northern Germany and Sweden were Lutheran. Italy, Spain, France, Austria, Poland were Catholic. Greece was Greek Orthodox. Russia was Russian Orthodox. Serbia was Serbian Orthodox. You get the picture. One denomination per country.
Uh-huh.
And then when Henry VIII breaks away from Rome because he wanted another wife and the Pope wouldn't recognize his divorce, he made himself the head of the Anglican Church. It's a hierarchical structure. Clergy, laity. You have the king, the Archbishop mm-hmm. of Canterbury, Archbishop of York, deaneries, vicars, curates, rectors, priests. Your relationship with God is through this government structure with the king at the top. And not to take the oath of supremacy, acknowledging the king as the head of the church, was treason.
Wow.
And so these Pilgrim separatists, they were risking their lives. So they would get raided. Mm-hmm. They met at William Brewster's house. He had a manor out in the country, and they would spy on him, and they'd break in and arrest him and take him to jail, and they'd be in jail for weeks. And so one of these Pilgrim groups decided to sell their property and go down to the ports and get on a ship and go to the Netherlands. And right before the ship takes off, they're robbed and put in jail as heretics.
Wow.
Another group of these Pilgrim separatists sell their property, and they arrange for a Dutch ship to sail up the coast, and they were going to be in rowboats and row out and meet them. But somebody snitched, and the Pilgrims had showed up a day early, and the women and children were waiting on shore while the men were stowing everything on the Dutch ship. Mm-hmm. And the women and children were captured.
Oh, wow.
And the Dutch captain said, I don't have an army with me, and he sails away with the men.
Wow.
And you could just picture these women and children on the shore watching that ship get smaller and smaller until mm-hmm. it disappears over the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And they passed those women and children from one court and jail to another for 2 years. Finally, a judge says, you really didn't do anything wrong. Go home. They go, duh, we sold our home. So just to get them out of their hair, they put them on a boat, sent them to Holland. They were reunited with their husbands. They lived in Leiden, Holland for about 12 years. Spain threatened to attack. They decided to go to Guyana, South America. But they heard about the Spaniards wiping out other countries' settlements,
mm-hmm.
like the French Protestants called Huguenots, tried to settle around Jacksonville, Florida. Fort Caroline. The Spanish found out about it and butchered all the men and took the women and children away. So the pilgrims said, we don't want to go near Spain. Let's go to Jamestown. Started 14 years earlier. It was a loser. 500 people had died. It went bankrupt. They threw it in the king's lap and it became a royal crown colony. But the pilgrims were going to go there anyway. But they get blown off course. They land in Massachusetts. They try sailing south, but off the coast of Cape Cod, it's really shallow. They almost sink on the sandbars. They call them shoals. And so the captain says, too dangerous to do any more sailing. Goes back to Plymouth Rock and says, everyone off the boat. And they said, well, you have a question. Who is going to be in charge? There's no king-appointed person in our group. There's 102 of us on the boat. Nobody's appointed by the king. Who's going to tell us what to do? They do something unique. It's called the Mayflower Compact. And they say, we, in the presence of God, covenant ourselves into a civil body politic to enact just and equal laws as shall be thought most meet or necessary, unto which we promise all due submission. Simple, revolutionary. It was a polarity change in the flow of power. Instead of top-down rule by kings and kings-appointed agents, it's bottom-up rule by we. It's 102 of us. It's just us. We decide. And they got their idea.
Yeah, that has to be a whole different, I mean, their mindset would have had to have completely changed because they've lived for their entire lives under the rule of a king. And now, like they're saying, now what do we do? There's nobody here to tell us what to do. So that, yeah, that would have been a not only a game changer, but a change in their mindset.
Right. It was a polarity change in the flow of power on planet Earth. And the womb of the Mayflowers conceived the child of self-government. So where did they get this idea? From their pastor, John Robinson. He was a separatist pastor. He was not a king-appointed Anglican priest. And these separatists had a congregational form of church government. And it was this concept where the pastor's job is to teach everyone how to have their own relationship with God the Father through Jesus Christ that died on the cross to pay for their sins. And then the pastor coaches each individual to become a mature Christian. You get in the habit of reading through the Bible yourself every day and praying every day. And then plug into the body and do something. If everything that's alive takes in and gives out. Every muscle to grow has to be exercised. And so the pastors would train the saints to do the work of the ministry. And then everybody would do something. And this congregational model they got from the Reformation, who got it from the Bible, but what part of the Bible? That first 400 years out of Egypt before King Saul. So here you have around 1400 BC, millions of Israelites, about 2.5 million, come out of Egypt. And for four centuries, there is no king. Every single person is taught the law, and they are personally accountable to God to follow the law. You're about to steal. Nobody's around. You know you can get away with it. Then you think God is watching.
Right.
He wants me to be fair. He said so in his law. And he's going to hold me accountable at some time in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates something in your head called the conscience.
Right.
And so ancient Israel, it worked. For four centuries until the priest stopped teaching the law. He said, what? Yeah, here's Eli, the high priest. His own sons are sleeping with women in the very tent where the Ark of the Covenant is. And then another Levite with a silver graven image in the house of a guy named Micah. And the tribe of Dan comes along and steals the graven image and tells this Levite, come along with us and you could be a priest to our whole tribe. And you're reading the story, scratching your head. And what is this Levite doing with a graven image? Isn't that one of the commandments? You're not supposed to have him. He's not following the law. And then the terrible story of a Levite with a concubine. The law says the Levite is to marry a virgin of his own tribe. Here he is with the woman he's not even married to. He's not following the law. And it turns into chaos. They all go to Samuel the prophet. And they say the self-government system's not working. We want to be like all the other countries. And Samuel cries, and the Lord tells him, they did not reject you, they rejected me. And so Samuel anoints King Saul. And so the kings of England look to the Bible for their authority, but they look to the King Saul and on part of the Bible.
Not
the divine right of kings. The Calvinist Puritans look to the Bible for their authority, but they look to the pre-King Saul period. There's 400 years. No king. Everybody taught the law and accountable to God to follow it. So King Saul is the divider between England and America. People, so the king of England, he was the theocrat. You had to believe exactly what he said or he'd burn you at the stake. America's founder said, no, no, no. We believe in freedom of conscience. We believe that your worship of God is only pleasing to God if it's voluntarily given. We don't want the government dictating stuff. So all the people that say, well, Christians want to set up a theocracy. It's like, duh, you know absolutely nothing about America's foundings. America's founders fled a theocracy. They didn't want a government exactly. dictating to them what they're supposed to believe about marriage, about sex, about children, about life, and when it begins. They want to have a freedom of conscience.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so that's the American experiment, is a bottom-up form of government where the people get to be in charge. Yeah. They took their church government, their congregational church government, and they made it their community government.
Mm-hmm.
So America started as a church plant.
Yeah, that's a good way to – never thought about it that way either, but that's true. It is very true. Now, one thing that the Pilgrims did that didn't work out so well, I mean, my understanding is they each family had their kitchen garden or such as that. But then there was a community cornfield, because corn was a staple that they really depended upon to live on. And there was a community cornfield that everyone worked in, supposedly. But at the harvest time, each family got equal amount of corn. Is that the way that it worked or was supposed to work, or did work but didn't work? Put it like that.
Right. So the Pilgrims had no money. And so they had to borrow money for their boat ride. And they went to investors in England who formed a company called the London Company, and it had bylaws. And the bylaws said everything had to be owned in common for 7 years. Everything got by cooking, hunting, fishing, trading shall go into ye common stock.
Uh-oh.
And everyone's livelihood and everything shall come out of ye common stock. The Pilgrims tried it, almost starved to death. William Bradford said that the young man objected to doing twice as much work as the old guy, but got paid the same.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the old man objected to being classed in labor with the younger ones and considered it a dishonor.
Wow.
And the women objected to having to wash other men's clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And William Bradford said that this communistic plan, even called it a communistic plan, was tried by good and honest men, but it proves the emptiness of the theory of Plato, because he's the first one that theorized everybody owning everything in common, proves the emptiness of the theory of Plato, that the ownership of things in common would somehow make men happy as if they were wiser than God.
So it wasn't...
He says after much,
go ahead, finish that thought.
He said, after much discussion, it was decided that every family should get their own plot of land. This made all hands more industrious. The women now went willingly into the fields and took their little ones with them to plant corn, while before they would allege weakness and to have compelled them would have been great oppression. So it's like, okay, forget this owning stuff in common. You get your own stuff.
So
and guess what? They all worked
hard.
They had a great harvest. And
absolutely. Yeah. So it wasn't the Pilgrims' idea. This was part of the bylaws of the company that financed their trip across.
Right.
Wow. Okay. Because I thought it was something that they thought it'd be a good idea. The Pilgrims thought it'd be a good idea to do that, but it was part of the bylaws that they'd signed when they got the funding from that London company. Okay.
Right, and they were actually on the boat and right about to take off when the agent of the London company came on board and said, okay, you got to sign this.
Oh, wow.
And they're like, what? You're springing this on us at the last minute? And they're like, yeah, but you got to sign it. And one other interesting thing was Squanto, and for people not familiar, the Pilgrims were religious, but others weren't. And so for a century, you had Spain taking gold from the Indians, and then you had the English, French, Dutch pirates robbing the Spanish gold, like Sir Francis Drake. And so some of these unscrupulous pirates would lure natives onto their boat, lock them below deck. And then when they would go back to Spain, they would sell them into slavery and make a quick buck.
Yeah.
And so William Bradford said that they landed in, November 1620.
Right.
Half of them died the first winter. They probably would not have survived. But out of the woods the next spring comes this Indian speaking to them in broken English, tells them about another Indian who could speak perfect English. And a couple of days later comes Squanto, and he had... And you can just picture the dismay on the Pilgrims. Squanto speaks to them in perfect English.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, he had lived in London for like 12 years.
Oh, wow.
And so the William Bradford said that one of those unscrupulous captains had stopped by years earlier and lured Squanto on board, took him to Spain, sold him into slavery. The monks found out about it. They made a big stink and they got him released. And then the monks helped him to get back to England. And he worked for the Newfoundland Company for years.
Wow.
And then finally got a boat to drop him back off on the shores of America. And he found out his whole tribe had died in a plague.
Mm-hmm.
William Bradford said a couple years earlier, a French ship was shipwrecked there at Cape Cod because it's real dangerous. And the sailors got ashore, but the Indians never left watching them and dogging them until they got the advantage, killed them all but three or four. And evidently one of them had illness and it wiped out the entire tribe much that the other tribes wouldn't touch the land. Mm-hmm. So the pilgrims, in a sense, landed on the one spot where there was no tribe. And then in another way, had Squanto not been kidnapped, mm-hmm. he most certainly would have died in the plague.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, William Bradford said he was a special instrument sent of God for their good. He showed them how to plant corn, where to take fish, showed them how to catch beaver skins. He was their interpreter with the Indians, helped keep us. There wasn't any disagreements and violence or anything. And then a couple years later, William Bradford says that they're sailing around the Cape Cod, caught in a storm, freezing rain. They put in a little island. They're shivering. And he said, here Squanto fell ill of Indian fever, bleeding much at the nose, mm-hmm. which the Indians take for a symptom of death. He bequeathed several of his belongings to his English friends and then begged Governor Bradford to pray for him that he would go to the Englishman's God in heaven.
Wow.
Well, the Englishman's God, these were the pilgrims. They were Christians. Mm-hmm. They were like serious mm-hmm. Christians. And he saw them for a couple of years and he says, I want to go to your God.
Yeah.
I believe he got saved.
And that in itself, those who don't believe in God or don't want us to acknowledge that God had a part in the founding of this nation, they don't want the story told that you just told. I mean, God's hand was in that whole thing with the kidnapping of Squanto to, you know, all that. You know, he's over there learning English. His tribe is wiped out by the plague while over in the New World. And the pilgrims land on the only safe place there. And that's all that happened only by the hand of God. That's the only way that happened. And the only way that this nation was established was by the hand of God. So we as a nation need to learn from the pilgrims' experience when it comes to communism, everything in common, and how it did not work then and it will not work now. What advice would you give to parents whose children are being indoctrinated with this revised history?
Well, one of the things is to put together a book on the pilgrims. It's called The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. And so that's a one that goes through what we just talked about today. Another is a book on socialism. It's called Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present. And it shows this concept of a bait and switch. So the early church, everything was owned in common, but it was voluntary versus mm-hmm. involuntary. So it was them selling their property, laying at the feet of the apostles. They didn't have the Roman government take away their property and lay at the feet of Pilate. So voluntary versus involuntary is sort of a big deal with God. And when the children of Israel went into the promised land, every family was given property. If you own property, you can accumulate stuff. The Bible called that being blessed.
Right.
And then you can give away some of your stuff. The Bible called that charity.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Karl Marx says communism can be summed up in one sentence, abolition of private property. So if you don't own anything, how can you be charitable? How can you give away what you don't have?
Exactly.
What are you going to steal and break the law? Now you're a thief. No, God entrusts you with stuff and then gives you opportunities to show on the outside the love of God on the inside. Socialism is counterfeit Christianity.
That's a good point. It absolutely is. And unfortunately, we're headed that direction as a nation. I'm fearful the public education system is helping that trajectory through the indoctrination of our future leaders. So that's scary. So could you give us your website again? And if folks can get your resources through your website?
Right. AmericanMinute.com.
Okay.
AmericanMinute.com. And then the book I've talked to, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century, and then the Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present. They can also sign up for a daily email where I go through short little snippets of this history that a lot of homeschoolers use and mm-hmm. radio hosts and people that like history. So it's AmericanMinute.com.
Okay, great. Yeah, I get that. I really enjoy it. Learned a whole lot of stuff. Appreciate the time that you've taken today to re-educate us on the true history of America. I really appreciate that. And we need to definitely pray for this nation and the students who are being indoctrinated that something would change in the public education system and that they would be willing to teach the true history again. If not, I think parents, if at all possible, need to pull their kids out of public school. It's my personal opinion.
Amen. I totally agree.
Okay. You take care and have a good day.
All right. God bless.
God bless you too. Bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.